We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to our new studio here on Veterans Memorial Boulevard. Right next to our great neighbor, Matt Bowers. If you need a new car, make sure you go check him out. Greatest car dealer in the whole entire universe. Get you the best prices, the best customer care, all that stuff. And it's a new era for us here, man. It's kind of exciting. Not necessarily exactly the way I want to be doing this, but we're doing it. We're here, we're going, and we're up.
It's exciting to be in here with you. We got your sneak preview. I was watching the first time you came in here and did your Q&A. But it looks great. It looks great out here. It looks great when you're driving by. It's awesome.
Yeah, so we got a great show for you guys. We're going to talk about just kind of the blueprint the Lions set out. Can the Saints follow it? We're going to talk about some of the offensive coordinator updates, what the Saints do with their salary cap. So we got all that and a whole lot more. We're presented by PJ's Coffee. So if you need a coffee, make sure you get your day started with them. All right, let's hit these ads. The New Orleans Dot Football Show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer five-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Hard Hide Punch Tool Strawberry Whiskey is an 86 proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Punch Tool strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Stop Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show. All right, let's get into our lead topic presented by Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers are excited to announce the opening of their new engagement salon. Friend & Company has a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from. And while you're there, check out their Florida Lee earring and necklace. They are specially priced for our NOF audience, so make sure you go check them out. They are pretty affordable if you need to get an engagement ring or anything
Valentine's
like that.
Valentine's present?
Yeah, Valentine's present. My guy Ken will take care of you. Make sure you go in there and talk to him. But our first topic today, the Lions have made their run in the playoffs. They don't have an elite quarterback.
Yeah.
They kind of feel like a team that is the blueprint for someone that wants to build around a mid-level quarterback, get the right structure around them, the right coaching around them, the right offense around them, and off you can go. Is that a realistic option for the Saints moving forward?
I think it is. I mean, I think it's worth mentioning. I mean, obviously, everything has to go right. And they've had like two first-round draft picks every year for the last 3 years because of the Matthew Stafford trade and other trades that they've made. And the Saints have not restocked their shelves with the draft picks. Penei Sewell, Aiden Hutchinson. I mean, you can't just gloss over the fact that they nailed it with their offensive tackle and their defensive end. But I think it's important to be like, with the Saints, the discussion for the last few years has been you either have to tear it down or go all in. And the Lions are like, no, you don't have to tear it down. You do not have to get a top five draft pick 3 years in a row. You don't have to trade everything for the number one pick in the draft. You can get there if you hire the right coach, build the right culture, hire the right offensive coordinator, which is absolutely what they did, and then put a couple good pieces. They had one Pro Bowler last year, one, Frank Ragnow. Like, and this year they had four, Penei Sewell, Sam Laporta, and Aiden Hutchinson. Amon-Ra St. Brown is obviously right on the cusp of that. But you can build a team by just getting a few things right. It does. You do not have to tear it down to become this kind of team. That doesn't mean it's easy, but it can be done.
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing they got going for them is Brad Holmes is incredible. Like, his drafts have been unbelievable the last three. Like,
well,
just...
sort of. They used two first-rounders at Jameson Williams. He's not even really a part of this team. They missed two.
You're going to hit everyone, but, I mean, if you go through there, they're getting a ton of contributions out of their last few drafts. Like, the Saints aren't. Like, if they're going to start building to become, the Lions, like, you need to start hitting on your drafts every single year. But you always are one great draft away from becoming a great team, and the Saints know that better than anyone else. But they are kind of proof positive that if you get the right offense and you do all these things around them to make things easier for a mid-level quarterback, you can get there. But Jared Goff's always kind of been the poster boy for that. Like, he got to a Super Bowl with the Rams playing in an offense that was kind of defining the league at the time. The Lions, though, did kind of get lucky with, like, a handful of things, like having Ben Johnson in your building as a quality control coach is kind of unbelievable. And then just, like, all of a sudden, it's kind of like having Joe Brady and recognizing that he could be something. But in a lot of teams don't, but they did and they found it. But yeah, right coach, right system, you can make it work with a quarterback that isn't necessarily winning games for you. You're winning games with him.
And again, I am not trying to sit here and say the Saints could be the next Lions. Like, the Saints are a much older team. But it is just the counter argument to the you have to do what the Panthers did. It is a you don't. You can keep being 7-9 and in the meantime until you hit on a great coach, a great offense, and two great draft picks. You don't have to tear it down to get here.
The counter argument to that, though, is then also it's just the Chiefs. Like, when you have a season where it's kind of a down year for you, your quarterback isn't necessarily at the peak of his powers for the whole entire year, where things are kind of rough, you're still in the conference championship game because you have him, and when he turns it on, it is freaking unbelievable.
Mahomes over everything. No
Mahomes
doubt about it.
Over everything. You know, it's kind of crazy. The Bills made that trade for them to get him. Like, the Saints aren't the only ones that probably have Mahomes regret.
Gosh.
Like, imagine being Josh Allen.
Have people been talking about this? Because I actually never thought about it. The Bills gave the Chiefs the key to their pain and suffering.
Yeah.
Like, that's the guy they lose to every year.
Yeah, and it sucks, man. Like, Josh Allen, like, he should be there every single year, but he just happened to run into the greatest quarterback of all time. And no disrespect to Tom Brady, like, Mahomes is just unbelievable to me. Like, I feel like I've never seen anyone like him. But yeah, the Bills gave them the guy that haunts their dreams, man. It's kind of crazy to think about. But yeah, I agree with you, man. We aren't sitting there saying that they can be the Lions, but this is a system where you could look at it and say, okay, that could work. And so much has to go right to get there. It's not like
But it's proof that teams are never as far away as their fan bases think they are. Fan bases always think this team can never win. And it's like, no, give me a Penei Sewell and Aiden Hutchinson and a couple of the right coaches, and all of a sudden we can be. Key moves can change your how you feel about your team.
No
doubt.
Gibbs was a great pick for them, too. All right.
Moving on. Of course, Sam Laporta. I already mentioned him already, but, you know, he went to Iowa, so I got to give him love.
Sure. Yeah. Tight end you. Moving on to our money segment presented by Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Last week, Mickey Loomis said the team wants to clean up the salary cap. Said the same thing last year. Didn't really follow through with it. They kind of went all in again last year, even though they wanted to do all that stuff. Do you believe him this time? What would it actually look like if the team actually goes about doing that?
I did not get the strongest sense. If anything, I thought he was like, yeah, we'll work on the salary cap. Like, I did not get a promise or a vow or a... And actually, I think for the last few years, they sort of have been moderately responsible with not just like, we'll worry about this when we're dead, you know, we'll sleep when we're dead or whatever. They added Derek Carr last year, which was obviously a huge piece, but they kind of make like one big move every year, and then all their other moves are somewhat fiscally responsible. They don't get themselves in a ton of things that they're never going to get out of. I kind of feel like they'll get out of it eventually. But yeah, the moves you put up on that board are these veterans, and boy, Ryan Ramczyk, $27 million, Cam Jordan, $23 million, and others. And I know there's a school of thought that says, well, don't touch their contracts, because then if you want to cut them next year, it'll be $30 million in dead money. And I just personally don't believe that, and I know the Saints don't believe it. Like, so what you're saying you shouldn't bring Cam's number from 23 to 10 this year, because then it'll go from 25 to 35 next year. I mean, so what? It's just moving money around. Who, name is not really attached to the money. They've got to get under the cap this year. They'll do it through their normal means. And eventually when they cut a guy, they'll take a big hit when they cut him. But that's sort of the bed they've made. I still do it the easiest way possible. I do it by going with Carr's contract. I do it by going with Ramchek's contract. I do it by doing Cam's contract. You pick the top eight salaries on this team, and you're already $82 million under the cap.
Yeah, so the thing is, can we put the graphic back up with all the money lists? Like, the thing I would do going through some of these, though, is like, I think there's a lot of names here where I'm going to them and telling them, like, we need to do something about this number, and it's not restructuring it. It's like, we got to change this number because we can't pay you
You're
this much money.
Pay cut.
Yeah.
That's a different conversation.
I think they need to go through in you know, I'd leave Tyron alone. You know, DeMario's one that I feel like, just because he's taking and he's still playing great, like, I'd probably leave DeMario alone too. But, like, you know, everybody else on here, like, they could, you know, I think Ramchek's a very serious conversation. I think Cam Jordan's someone that you got to have a serious conversation with, even though he just signed his extension last year. I can't pay Taysom $15.8 million for the usage I get out of him. I think he's a great player, but he's not giving you $15.8 million worth of value. So, like, I'm not just restructuring these deals. Like, I'm going to him and being like, look, we got to do something about, like, your base salary. We got to lower it. And obviously we're talking about cap hits here.
To be fair, yeah, these are cap hits. I want to say Taysom's due about 10. DeMario's due about 12. Alvin's due about 10.5. So in general, you can shave $5 to $8 million off these numbers. Cam's salary is about 13. The one guy, definitely, I think if Ryan Ramchek's going to play for this team, I think he is absolutely the guy on this list who is probably going to have to agree to a pay cut or agree to it being incentive based because of his health issues, the most of anyone on this list. But you're right. They've done pay cuts with guys recently. They've done it with Jameis Winston, Andres Pete. They've done it a lot over the years. And this list in particular, there are some pay cut candidates on that list, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I don't think I can give Ramchek $17 million with doubts. But again, like, I heard that he told them he plans to be back next year. So, you know, the retirement thing, at least as of January 22nd, 2024, is not something that's currently in the cards. So that's at least some good news for them. But yeah, look, it's interesting, though, like, as far as, like, the restructures go, like, if they ever do get committed to reworking or cleaning up the cap, like, these are figures that you got to start paying, but they can't. Like, yeah, they literally can't. Like, you can't field the team and do it. So what is the half measure? I guess it would be doing what you got to do to get under the cap and then maybe not going out and spending a ton of money, which, you know, Derek Carr blew that up a little bit last year, but it's going to be fascinating.
Well, there's a model right there in front of us. It's Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Like, the Buccaneers decided to lick their wounds this year. And they, because the Buccaneers started following the Saints' methods after COVID and while they were keeping that Tom Brady Super Bowl team together. And they went all in. I think they had, at one point, I think the second highest cap overage behind the Saints in the entire NFL. They're like, it's worth it. We've got Tom Brady. We're going to try to win Super Bowls. And this year they decided, let's just eat it all this year. And they did that and won the division anyway. Which, first of all, it makes the Saints look like, hey, Saints, why didn't you do that? Okay, that's one school of thought. But it's also showing you that the Saints can choose to do that in 1 year and stop the panic. Like, if they ever wanted to, the Saints could go from being $80 million over the cap every year to just, like, $25 million over cap the next year. If they chose to do that, they just don't feel like they have to. They aren't as worried by the size of these numbers as other people are, because they know how kind of easy it is to get out of it if they ever choose to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I just don't think it's ever going to be in their DNA to actually do it. And what's their incentive right now? Like, so you dial back and you're trying to make it. So DA and Carr kind of, and it seems like they're very committed to making it work for DA and Carr, that they think the narrative's wrong on everybody. So, like, what are you going to do? You're going to pull back and then you're going to lick your wounds for a year and then you're going to just submarine that? Like, I don't think that's what they plan to do. I kind of expect them to go pedal to the metal again. I mean, they kind of got to. But yeah, I don't know. I just don't really think it's necessarily in their DNA to kind of do that. So it's
except for one big player that we're going to talk about a lot this offseason, who's not on that list because he's his own case, is Marshawn Lattimore. Yeah. Like,
that's not a cap move, though.
It's not a cap move except for the fact that he's a $20 million a year player. So trading him is also taking that money off your books long term, which is a factor in that decision. But it wouldn't be just for cap reasons. Yeah.
I want to be, like, crystal clear. Like, based on what I understand, if they trade him, it is absolutely not a money decision. Yeah. It's a different decision if they decide to trade him. I don't think that's motivated. It's a benefit to getting rid of him, but, like, they aren't trading him because
To save money.
To save money. That is not the primary objective there. So, yeah, we got a whole lot more coming up for you guys after our ad break here. We're going to talk about just where the OC stuff stands. There's a guy that just got hired today that could affect that OC search. And then we got our Martin's question of the day. So stay tuned for all that and a whole lot more right after this break.
It's carnival time at New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company. Our gumbo combos are back. Enjoy our hot gumbo, fries, and your choice of shrimp, catfish, softshell crab, or frog legs starting at $9.99 at New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company.
Are you tired of renting and ready to own your dream home? Contact Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, your trusted source for home loans. Our competitive rates and flexible terms can help make your home ownership dreams a reality. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to refinance, our experienced lenders are here to help. Our online application process allows you to apply on your schedule. It's quick, easy, and convenient. Visit us online at jeffersonfinancial.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Martin Wine and Spirits is home to a selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and much, much more. They are family owned and operated since 1946 and specialize in wine, spirits, gourmet food, gift baskets, catering, and tasting events. They have many locations, so they're never too far away. You can check them out in Metairie, New Orleans, Mandeville, and Baton Rouge, or if it's more convenient, you can always shop online. Whether you're a wine novice or a seasoned collector, you'll enjoy the Martin Wine and Spirit experience. All right, welcome back to our new studio on Veterans Memorial Boulevard. And if you need a new car, make sure you go check out my guy, Matt. He's our neighbor next door. He'll get you in a new F-150, Mustang 5.0, whatever you need at the best prices that you can find anywhere. All right, so let's get into our moment of the day presented by New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company. The Saints added Gerard Johnson, Houston's quarterback coach, to their list of offensive coordinator candidates. He obviously has ties to the Shanahan tree, coaching under Slowick there, who came up under Shanahan, but isn't a direct descendant of Sean McVay, but he kind of exists in the same garden.
He learned a little of it, but that's not his background. So every other guy was actually a direct McVay descendant. This is a slight branch off of a Shanahan branch.
McVay slash Shanahan, yeah.
But so, and he learned a little something, I'm sure, from Slowick, who might end up being a head coach. But what's interesting to me is, okay, it proves that, you know, you didn't just have to work for Sean McVay. I think they're probably just as impressed as the work he did with C.J. Stroud as anything else, which, and this is not the only offensive coordinator interview he's getting this year. So it is like the very first three guys we said is worked with McVay, works for McVay, worked with McVay, worked for McVay. And this one's a little different. I like everything about every resume that I've seen, but it is a good reminder that they don't just have tunnel vision either.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with him is, can he call plays? I mean, that's something that you're going to find out. With all of them, you kind of got to find that out. And it's going to be interesting to see how they kind of determine who can and who can't, or who might be good at it and who might not be good at it. Because there isn't a lot of room for, like, learning curve here. Like, you have to figure out some type of system where you're studying people from the past and going, all right, they did this, this, and this, and they succeeded, and this is how fast they succeeded. There has to be some type of study. I don't know what that looks like. I'm sure the data exists somewhere, and I'm sure somebody's working it to try to figure it out. That's going to be the biggest thing. I was looking at Houston and kind of comparing them to San Fran and the Rams, and sorry, I got up on NewOrleans.football. If you want to sign up for the site, make sure you do that, NewOrleans.football/subscribe. Use the code NOF to save 20% off your first payment. We've got all kinds of analysis, all kinds of coverage, whole lot more coming, breakdown completely of the tendencies of the Saints, comparing it to McVay, all that stuff up on the site. But while going through that, I looked at Houston, compared them to the Rams and the Fort. Like, they the DNA is so similar. Like, to the way that they build their offense, there aren't a lot of tells. The way they use their run game is a lot more gap and man scheme runs, which is interesting because McVay at one point was kind of at the forefront of, like, heavy overdose on zone running schemes, and, like, he's changed that to something else. But they still, like, only get six guys in the box. So, like, you're playing bully ball. So, like, all the stuff you're doing creates all these advantages. And then if you bring in that McVay system and you drop Alvin in it, Alvin was six or fewer in the box last year, was at 4.5 yards per carry. His overall average was, what, 3.9 or 3.7? So, like, he was getting heavy boxes and just getting murdered. Yeah. So, like, if you lighten those boxes and give him space, everything says that he can still be a top running back, you know, have those averages, have those numbers.
I don't disagree with that.
So I think it's objectively, I think his game has changed a little bit over time. Like, there's not as much, like, make you miss, but there's still all the run through you, the still the balance, still all the, you know, all that stuff. I don't think the explosiveness, which was never his you know, high end speed was never his main thing, but I think that everything's still there. If you get him in the right system, these systems look like the ones that are going to make him work. So it's just kind of fascinating. Like the DNA is there, like there is a commonality here, but yeah, if everything was off of this tree before, like it's moved over a little bit to here.
I mean, this is one knock against, I mean, Gerard Johnson was obviously the quarterback's coach there. They proved in Houston that you can't just say, hey, we're running the Shanahan run game. I mean, Houston had a pretty lousy run game for a lot of this year. They eventually found something with Devin Singletary late in the year. Didn't really seem to show up when they needed it most in the playoffs. But so it's not an automatic, you know, you hired someone who used to work with Kyle Shanahan. You're now going to have a top five rushing offense. It's not that easy, but I'd still like to try. You also mentioned play caller. Worth noting that the one of the known candidates, the one who did have play calling experience was Shane Waldron, who everybody wanted to hire, and it looks like the Bears, who happen to have the number one pick in this year's draft and a defensive-minded head coach, it looks like they're going to finalize that deal with Shane Waldron, so he's going to be off the list.
Yeah, so he's leaving the list. I think very soon Dan Pitcher is going to be scratched off the list. Brian Callahan, the Bengals offensive coordinator, is getting the head coaching job with the Titans. So Pitcher had interviewed here. He actually interviewed here already, but like that's not gonna happen. I think he's probably gonna end up staying and taking that job, which makes a lot of sense. That's not like, yeah, you know, oh, the Saints couldn't recruit a guy. Yeah. Like, I think that's just kind of the thing. But look,
yeah, you keep working with Joe Burrow there. That's probably not a bad idea.
I want to hit another talking point here, because like one of the big talking points is like, who would want this job? Like, who would want to work for DA if you get fired? Like, you're screwing up all this stuff. Like, we've said a million times, there's 32 of these jobs. Most of them, if it's not a Brian Callahan situation, it's a bad situation in some level. There's something wrong with it. Like, there's something wrong with the Bears situation. Like, yeah, it's a risky job, so to speak.
But he just
like,
took a job under Matt Eberflus, who has been a guy who has been on the hot seat for a year longer than Dennis Allen has been. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the thing. Like, Ryan Nielsen took a job as a defensive coordinator in Atlanta under a coach who looked like he might be going sooner than later. He ends up getting fired. Ryan Nielsen gets another job as a defensive coordinator immediately. Like, you have to establish yourself.
If you're
in
good,
these
you
want to
show you're good.
And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if Dennis Allen goes. You are operating independent of that, and you are showcasing what you can do. Yeah. And the league is smart enough. If you're one of these people that think, like, who's going to want to work with this quarterback or whatever? Like, first of all, Derek Carr is confident enough for you to showcase what you can do as a play caller. Like, absolutely. We've seen it at the end of the year. But secondly, the league is smart enough to know if you are calling plays that work and the quarterback isn't executing them. Yeah. And you can show what you can do. Like, if you are good at your job and you get a chance, you are immediately going to get another OC job, and it's not going to hurt your career. And worst comes to worst, if you're a QB coach and you come here and you don't show what you can do as an OC and everybody gets fired, you just go back to being a QB coach. But guess what? You went from making $400,000 to $900,000. So, like, what's the problem?
And we've mentioned this on the show a couple of times. If you... I think, I mean, we automatically say Dan Pitcher might want to stay in Cincinnati, but that's Zach Taylor's offense. If Dan Pitcher came to New Orleans, it would be Dan Pitcher's offense. Sure. So, like, having the defensive-minded head coach gives you a big leg up on hiring an offensive coordinator. And how many defensive-minded head coaches are there in the league? 8?
Yeah.
10? Like, it's all offensive wunderkinds now. So you get autonomy over the offense if you come here. And I think that will make it an attractive job for somebody, even if they feel like they're just doing it as a stepping stone to show what they've got. It's a great opportunity. And you mentioned Derek Carr. I don't think Derek Carr is a detriment. I think Derek Carr is probably a plus. I think there are enough offensive pieces here in place that I'd be like, yeah, I can work with that. I think absolutely.
Where it hurts you, the one place that hurts you is like this situation relative to like some others. Because like, you're going to the Bears, you're probably getting Caleb Williams. Like, you probably got some time there. Things are probably going to turn around. And they had a decent season. That you can trade Fields. You can get some other people. I think where the state situation hurts you is just in some of that recruiting. Like, yeah, obviously there's going to be some situations that are a little bit better. Like, you aren't going to beat out the Bengals. Like, if Pitcher wants to stay where he is, like, you aren't going to be able to outbid them. The Bears situation, anywhere where there's a head coach that left or, you know what I mean? Like, a new situation where the OC got hired as a head coach and you're coming into a better situation. Like, if Ben Johnson leaves Detroit, like, you're probably not going to outbid Detroit on their next OC or whatever. But the situation, they're going to get somebody, and they're going to get somebody that is on their list. This just might not be one of the first 3-4 names, but like, you're going to get one of them guys. And it's a better situation this year hiring than it was last year. Just circling back while we're talking about Carr. Like, is there a Carr, Goff? Like, where do those guys kind of stack up for you?
Okay, so I remember, it's so funny. Do you remember back at the beginning of the year when we ranked our top five NFC quarterbacks? And we had slightly different lists. We all had Jalen Hurts on top, I remember.
Not anymore.
But I don't think any of us had Goff in the top five. I don't think any of us had Brock Purdy in the top five. I know none of us had Baker Mayfield in the top five. And none of us had Jordan Love in the top five. And they were the final four quarterbacks remaining in the NFC. But, yeah, Carr, I think we all kind of – maybe some people had Goff ahead of Carr before this year started. But there is no question they live on the same tier. And here's what's funny. Goff's passer rating this year. Goff had one of the best years of his career. Had the best completion percentage of his career this year. He threw for 4,500 yards, 30 touchdowns. I think those were like the second highest totals of his career. And he had a 97.9 rating. Carr had a 97.7 rating. I mean, their numbers over time. I mean, Goff had some explosive years in McVay's system. Carr had a couple explosive years in Gruden's system. I think they exist in the exact same tier. Now, that's a slap in the face to Jared Goff. I'm not trying to say he doesn't deserve all the kudos he's getting. He's doing it at the top of his profession. But I don't think he's got more tools in the toolbox than Carr has.
All right, so I keep my top 10 quarterback list already. I don't know if you want to put yours together, look it up. We talked
I'll
about
just
this
tell
recently.
You if I disagree because we went back and forth on text.
All right, so number one, Patrick Mahomes, obviously a tier apart.
Is this like if you're a GM and you get your hands on these guys going forward, or is this based on what they've accomplished? Like does Goff get more credit because he's one of the final four teams right now, or is this who are you drafting for 2024 right now?
I mean, Mahomes is just number one.
He's number one no matter what.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. any criteria, all time. Like, what I got Mahomes number one, man. Right. Like, I think he's the best to ever do it, and I think that's going to bear fruit at the end. Right. I want to see the chase on Brady. I mean, the rings obviously matter, but the talent between those two is just kind of, Mahomes is just, it's disgusting. All right, but like, I don't really know how to define my ranking here. Like, I just think it's the top 10.
Yeah,
it's the top 10. Like, I think any way you put it, like, I'm gonna argue for it. And most of these guys are kind of young, except for there's one older guy on here that I would kind of, you know, like, if we were doing it for long term, I might look a different way and move him down. My number two, Lamar Jackson. I think the league kind of screwed
up. I can't wait to watch
this off season. Yeah,
can't wait to watch that game.
Yeah. Three, I'm going Josh Allen, and he's kind of taking some heat right now. They could have won that game yesterday. I feel like he did enough to win, and they kind of lost it for him. Okay. My next one, CJ Stroud. Yeah, I got him there, man. Like, maybe
a little recency bias in that ranking. I mean, I'm not going to argue with what he did this year, but four's pretty high right away.
Like, coming off the year, though, like, I don't, you know?
Yeah.
We'll see next year. Like, you got to keep showing it for him to be, like, chiseled in, but I think he's. Yeah, I think he's there right now. Burrow, kind of hard to rank him because of the injury. I mean, I think if healthy Burrow, I'm probably putting him ahead of Stroud, but, like, I don't know, out of sight, out of mind a little bit there. So that's probably not fair in some regards. So that might be some recency bias there. Then it starts getting weird. Matt Stafford, I guess, is next.
He looked great at the end of the year.
Yeah. Trevor Lawrence, I guess.
That seems high. Yeah.
Who you putting?
I mean, I'm putting Jalen Hurts higher than Trevor Lawrence. I don't know what to make of Justin Herbert. Are people just telling me Justin Herbert's good, or is he actually good? Like, he doesn't win, but he puts up, like, I don't know, like.
You got to win, man. You got to win. I'm sorry. Like, you got to win a little. You get some point, you got to win. And look, I know it's probably not all his fault, and I expect him to turn around, but you got to win at some point. Like, the talent is there, but, like, you got to win. Like, and I hate to put it all on a quarterback, but, like, at some point, like. Yeah. Man, you got to win it. You got to. Yeah. I don't know. I've seen them lose some games for him, but I got Herbert next on my list.
Yeah.
Then I close it out with Kyler Murray, and I got Hurts. And look, I'm probably being unfair to Hurts putting him at 10, but like I just felt like he had a weird, awkward season. Some injuries in there, too. It's probably being a little bit unfair to him. I think he probably got gassed a little bit off the Super Bowl, and then like he kind of did the playoff run and then kind of came back down a little bit. I mean, there's something bad in the water in Philly, so I feel like there's some, like, toxicity that probably affected him a little bit. He's probably higher than 10, but, like, it's weird making – the top 10 list is kind of hard to put together.
I mean, Kirk Cousins probably has a case somewhere, another out-of-sight, out-of-mind guy. Jared Goff has a case in there. Brock Purdy, a lot of people love. Dak, a lot – but the problem is once you get past 1 and 2 – and I guess 3 and 4. I'd probably have Allen and Burrow pretty safely in the top four. There's a asterisk and a well, or a they need to prove it, or but what about the bad? Like I feel like there's less sure things on that list than there used to be.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's weird. Now, like you know, at some point, like Breeze was like fourth. fourth or fifth in the league, like on a lot of people's lists, you know, like, and it's just, right. I don't necessarily know that it's as strong.
Yeah, Philip Rivers was always sixth, yeah. Like every year for like 10 years in a row. And I think Philip Rivers would be higher than sixth today, prime Philip Rivers. We didn't mention Jordan Love. He's another guy that deserves mention. There's depth, and it's going to be fascinating when four or five more first round picks enter the league this upcoming year. The depth is pretty incredible. I mean, Baker Mayfield just proved he could be a guy that you can compete with as your starter. I feel like I don't love how top heavy the list is, or at least, you know, sure thing five through whatever, but I feel like we're going to feel better about like the 24th guy on that list than we've felt about the 24th guy on that list in a long time.
I would hate to be the Bucks and feel like I'm forced to pay Baker after season. They're going to kind of have to. All right, moving on to our Martin's question of the day. Martin's is home to a wide selection of handpicked barrel select bourbon whiskeys and more. Martin's, so much more than just one. They got a fire deli too. If you've never been there, go check that out. All right, how do you think the Saints will address the O-line and D-line this offseason? Bring back Pete and Hurst and draft Edge, or draft OT and use free agency to address the defensive line? I know you have a strong take on this.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you have to pay for the defensive line. You have to buy an edge rusher in free agency. That's your Derek Carr move this year to me. And first of all, this draft class, I've taken a surface level look at this year's draft class. I don't think a lot of people think there's surefire defensive ends that are going to be drafted around 14th. There wouldn't even be a trade up and get a surefire defensive end. You're not getting guaranteed immediate help in the draft and edge rush, and you need guaranteed immediate help on your defensive line. I'm spending money on free agency. I don't know if I'm spending $20 million, if I'm spending $8 million for another piece, but I'm adding to that. I'm filling that hole. I feel differently about the offensive line. I do draft that, and I know you don't want to force yourself into a specific position in the draft. Maybe there's a wide receiver that they're like, it's our number two guy on the board, we have to take him. But with that pick or the second round pick or trading back up into round one or something like that, I want offensive line in the draft because I do think you can bring back Pete. Hurst is under contract. And I think and they're going to keep working with Trevor Penning. They do not want to give up on that investment yet. So you've got guys in the building that will be projected as your starters early this year. But all three of them might be gone as early as next year. So you need a draft pick who could compete for a role this year. But you need to find a long-term starter on that left side because you've got three guys who are 1-2 years at best, or Trevor Penning question mark there.
Yeah, I kind of agree with everything you said. I mean, you have to get the immediate help on the defense. They had 34 sacks this year, I think. Is that the right number?
Yeah, I think they were tied for the fourth fewest, whatever the number was.
Yeah, I mean, that's not good enough. And that's just, you gotta have individual talent that can win. Like, the thing that's going to be interesting to me is, like, and I don't think they will, they just need to make sure they don't overvalue Peyton Turner or Trevor Penning. Like, you can't. Right. Think they're going to give you anything. Like, I hope they aren't going into the year thinking we're going to revitalize these people and we're going to get, oh, like, if Trevor gets this and this, he's going to contribute. Like, well, let's look at it objectively, and you guys need to plan as if he's not. Like, and that's not a knock on Trevor. Like, I think he can still get there. We both like Peyton Turner this summer. I think you've seen that and spotted it before anybody, and it was a real thing. Like, by the end of it, it was undeniable. Yeah. So
you can tell by the way they talk about him, they thought it was real too. Yeah.
Absolutely. But that scares me that they're saying it, because look, no knock on him. It's just been a lot of hindrance. So yeah, you got to go in and prepare this way. But I think that you can bring back Pete, keep Hurst, kind of keep what you have on the offensive line and be fine if you get shut out in the draft. But if you go into the draft and we have to draft edge rush and you get shut out, you're screwed. So you have to purchase that. Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, it'd be great if there was an edge rusher. Like, I don't care that they missed on Davenport and Turner. That doesn't mean I stopped doing it. It's still the second most important position in football.
It's the worst. I hate that take. Like, well, this didn't work, so you can't ever do it again. Well, like, maybe you get it right this time.
You can't
get it right without trying. And, you know, there's just a handful of positions where people are like that. Like, I get their situation. I get that it's scary. I think that you could probably say that they haven't done the greatest job scouting college pass rushers. Something about that process has been spotty. But again, we've talked about this a lot. Like, they've had to take risks to try to get guys, and that's not giving them a pass on it. Like, you mess up the evaluation, but where they have drafted throughout
the
years.
They would have drafted Myles Garrett and
if they were up higher. Yeah.
It's not like they didn't like those. I do always want, like, I've never gotten a good answer. Maybe you have. On would they have taken Micah Parsons? Because that's not a Saints guy, but he's a once-in-a-lifetime talent. I want to go back to something you just said. All right, let's pretend the draft board just doesn't fall their way. Everybody's taking offensive tackles higher than they expected. They just don't see the value. They get a new offensive coordinator you're really excited about. Comes from the McVay tree. He's doing all the right things. And in week one, it's Pete at left tackle, Hurst at left guard, McCoy at center, Ruiz at right guard, Ramchek at right tackle. Can that be a top 10 offense with the right OC?
It can be. I think it can be, you know, solid. Top 10, I don't know. I don't know. Top 10 kind of scares me, like locking into that. If you had said like top 14, I would have been like, yeah, sure, they can figure that out. I mean, I think the pieces are there. We saw later in the year, they kind of got it together a little bit. The run blocking was kind of bad, but I kind of feel like that's part of like how they built their run game. So if you're building your run game a little bit better.
You can fix run blocking with strategy.
Yeah.
Pass protection, you got to talent.
I feel like pass pro was like a red alarm emergency maybe the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. And then after that, I don't think it was that bad. I think Carr had decent protection. It obviously got much better late in the year. We saw that they can kind of mask some of their inefficiencies on the offensive line with better offensive game planning. So it's possible you can get there. I would feel better about it, though, if they had just, you know, maybe one more piece that you feel like you
like
can
like a left tackle that they drafted with a top 20 pick a year ago.
Yeah, that would
be nice.
Yeah. That guy hits and it's a little bit different. Yeah. All right. That's all we got for you guys today. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back Wednesday at 7 o'clock coming to you from the new studio. If you aren't signed up for the website, make sure you do that. NewOrleans.football/subscribe. Got the members only podcast, all of our news, all of our analysis, coverage that you can't get anywhere else. And we'll see you next time.